ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। नारायणं नमस्कृत्यां नरं चैव नरोत्तमां देवीं सरस्वतीं व्यासं ततो जायामुदीरये नष्टप्रायेषु अभद्रेषु नित्यं भागवत सेवया। भगवती उत्तमा श्लोके भक्तिर्भवती न इष्टकी। सो वी आर रीडिंग टुडे फ्रॉम 10th कैंटो चैप्टर 47 चैप्टर एंटाइटल्ड द सॉन्ग ऑफ द बी टेक्स्ट नंबर 24। दान व्रत तप होम जप स्वाध्याय संयम श्रेयोबी विविध च अन्यै कृष्णे भक्ति ही साध्यते। दान व्रत तपो होम जप स्वाध्याय संयमै श्रेयोभिर्विविधैश्चान्यै कृष्णे भक्तिर्हि साध्यते। दान व्रत तपो होम जप स्वाध्याय संयमै श्रेयोभिर्विविधैश्चान्यै कृष्णे भक्तिर्हि साध्यते। दान व्रत तपो होम जप स्वाध्याय संयमै श्रेयोभिर्विविधैश्चान्यै कृष्णे भक्तिर्हि साध्यते। दान व्रत तप होम
माताजीस दाना charity, vrata, strict vows, tapaha, austerities, homa, fire sacrifices, japa, private chanting of mantras, Swadhyaya, study of Vedic texts. Samyamai, and regulative principles. Shreyobi, by auspicious practices. Vividai, various. Cha, also. Anyai, others. Krishne, to Lord Krishna. Bhaktihi, devotional service. He, indeed. Sadhyate, is realized. Translation and purport by the disciples of His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Translation. Devotional service unto Lord Krishna is attained by charity, strict vows, austerities and fire sacrifices, by japa, study of the Vedic texts, observance of Vedic principles, observance of regulative principles, and indeed by the performance of many other auspicious practices. Purport. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti explains the processes described here as follows. Dana, donations given to Lord Vishnu and his devotees. Vrata, observing vows such as Ekadashi. Tapas, renunciation of sense gratification for Krishna's sake. Homa, fire sacrifices dedicated to Vishnu. Japa, privately chanting the holy names of the Lord. Swadhyaya, study and recitation of Vedic texts such as the Gopala Tapani Upanishad. Om Ajnana Timirandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Sri Guruve Namaha Sri Chaitanya Mano Beshtam Svapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Tadanti Swapadantikam Vandeham Sri Guru Sri Yuta Padakamalam Sri Gurum Vaishnavamscha Sri Rupam Sagrajatam Sagana Ragunatan Vitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Sri Radha Krishna Padam Sagana Lalitam Sri Vishakan Vitamscha He Krishna Karuna Sindhu Dinabando Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tapta Kanchana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vrishabhano Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Jai Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Srivasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Ramo Hare Ramo 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 Hare 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 Krishna. So we are continuing to discuss about Uddhava coming and meeting the gopis. And over the last few weeks we have been hearing how the gopis have been pouring out their heart to Uddhava, telling him all about how they used to have this wonderful association with Lord Krishna. And now Lord Krishna is no longer there. They are feeling so much of intense separation. And after hearing them out, Uddhava starts speaking. Just in the previous verse, yesterday's verse, we heard Uddhava telling the gopis that you gopis are all successful and are universally worshipped because you have dedicated your minds in this way to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Vasudeva. So we see over here, Uddhava, when he starts, actually he has come over to Vrindavan in order to pacify the gopis. But then rather than beginning the process of pacifying them immediately, what Uddhava does, he starts glorifying their wonderful qualities, appreciating them for what they are. And this we see is a common theme that runs across the entire Srimad Bhagavatam as well as the Chaitanya Charitamrita. In several places we see where the Lord himself comes and begins to glorify his devotees. Like we have Vamandev coming to Bali Maharaj, and Bali Maharaj is performing this Ashwamedha Yajna, and Vamandev decides to come into the arena where this Ashwamedha Yajna is being performed. And as soon as Vamandev comes, he exhibits his Brahman effulgence, and Bali Maharaj, immediately upon seeing the small Brahmana boy, gets up from his seat and gives him a place of high, gives him a high seat. And then he gets up from his own seat and washes the feet, the lotus feet of Vamandev. And then he sprinkles the water on his head. And then he looks at Vamandev and starts glorifying Vamandev. And then finally, Bali Maharaj tells Vamandev that it appears as if you have come over here for something. Please tell me, what can I offer you? I can give you a cow, I can give you a home, I can even get you married to a Brahmani girl. I can give you land, in fact he offers everything that he had to Vamandev. And if you see, Vamandev, as soon as he hears Bali Maharaj offering whatever he had, Vamandev starts glorifying Bali Maharaj. And Vamandev tells him that, no, you are not a miserly person. You are not in a dynasty of miserly persons. In fact, you are the grandson of Prahlad Maharaj. So how can you be miserly? Whatever you promise, definitely I know for sure you are going to fulfill. And then Vamandev starts talking about the whole lineage of Bali Maharaj and says that Hiranyakashipu, first he talks about Hiranyaksha and says Hiranyaksha was such a great demon that he was actually with great difficulty Varahadev defeated Hiranyaksha. And you can see that actually this is just a way by which to please Bali Maharaj. Because we know from the pages of the Srimad Bhagavatam that actually the Lord was playing with Hiranyaksha. Right? And in order to kill Hiranyaksha, what did the Lord have to do? He just had to take his hoof and hit it very, very gently just below his ear. Right? And at that instant, Hiranyaksha was dead. But still, here, Vamandev is telling Bali Maharaj that, Hiranyaksha was killed by Varahadev, by the Lord, with so much of difficulty. And then Hiranyakashipu, he was such a great personality. Right up to the end of his life, he was somehow or the other thinking that he should be defeating Vishnu. And then Vamandev even started glorifying Virochan and said that Virochan actually gave away the duration of his life just on the basis of the request of the demigods. And after glorifying Bali Maharaj and his whole dynasty, then the Lord asks him what he has come for. Right? So this is a very clear way by which to win over the hearts of your opponent. Right? So if you want something from a particular person, then the best thing to do is to first go and glorify him. Right? Of course, in Kali Yuga, this is all done for wrong reasons. Right? People are glorified. Now you see in this this whole political arena, when people glorify all these politicians, it's basically because they want something out of them. Right? And mostly whatever they want, not mostly, all the times, whatever they want is for their own sense gratification. Some or the other, they want facilities, they want this connection to that politician, they want the association of the politician, just for their own sense gratification. right? So this particular quality is there in all of us, that when we want something from somebody, we go to that person and then glorify him, right? So Vamandev then starts asking Bari Maharaj that all that I want from you is 3 steps of land measured by my feet. Right? Everybody in that assembly was actually very much surprised. I mean, here is the king of the entire planet Earth, and you know, Vamandev comes to him and asks him for 3 steps of land. I mean, this is something for them completely inconceivable. Of course, Prabhupada writes in the purport that Vamandev was all along, you know, he had very clear intentions of asking him for the 3 paces of land so that finally he will conquer everything, whatever Bali Maharaj had. But then the entire audience in the kingdom of Bali Maharaj was surprised when Vamandev asked for such a small request. And Bali Maharaj then started saying that it looks as if, you know, you're not very intelligent. You're such a small boy and you're lacking in the intelligence to ask me, who can give you anything, you're asking me for 3 steps of land. I mean, this is nonsense what you're asking for. And then Vamandev tells Bali Maharaj that actually anybody who gets or who takes more than what he needs, such a person is invariably dissatisfied. Everybody should just take what they require, what they need for their day-to-day maintenance. And anything more than that, they are not going to be happy. And we see, you know, Srila Prabhupada gives a very elaborate purport there and says that the whole problem of this material creation, the whole problem with society today is that everybody is aspiring to take more from material nature than what they actually need. So much of desires in order to enjoy this material world that they will go to any extent in order to acquire whatever they don't need also. Right? One is, of course, that part which they need, which everybody is expected to work for, right? So that is the natural constitutional position of the living entity, that he has to serve and he has to do his duty in order to earn a livelihood. But when a person wants to satisfy his uncontrolled senses, then he tries his level best in order to acquire much more than what he needs. And somehow if you see, that is how this material world has been arranged. And people who control material nature, who are the so-called controllers of this material nature, who think themselves to be controller, they want to control other living beings, other humans, other people, because of this particular propensity in them to have more than what they need. They are being controlled by other living entities, other human beings. Because they know that this person, you know, he has this desire, his unlimited desire in order to acquire more and more and more, and this is being exploited by the people who have these resources. Right? Some of the most wealthiest people in the world, right? I mean, they control so much of resources, and the way they want to multiply their resources is to try and control human beings by giving facilities to have more and more and more, or to desire more and more and more. Because they understand that if there is a certain unfulfilled desire in a person, then this unfulfilled desire can be exploited by them. And if you see, particularly in the Western countries, of course, there is, they try and cover all this under a certain sheen, under a certain, you know, very good behavior. But ultimately, the root is the same. You know, everybody is trying to exploit each other for their own for their own selfish purposes. But there's one redeeming feature in the Western world, that at least whatever they are doing, they'll try and share whatever they get with the other people. No doubt the politicians and the industrialists, they want to control the people who are below them. But then along with this process of controlling, they also want to give them a few facilities. It's not that they, you know, try and enjoy this only with themselves. So that's the one good redeeming feature about the Western world, that the basic necessities of a human being is taken care of. But the governments ensure that the basic necessities of a human being is taken care of, food, clothing and shelter. Right? But then it is that sense gratification which a person desires that drives him to work harder and harder and harder. Because if we were satisfied with whatever the government was providing in terms of food, clothing and shelter, then there would not be any necessity for him to work so hard. Right? But the government, somehow or the other, induces you to work harder and harder by, you know, by giving you the facility, and at the same time they are also giving you the rewards for those better performances. And that keeps a person going on in order to perform more and more. And just somehow or the other, you know, so much he is involved in this particular aspect of earning more and more and more money, which invariably he doesn't need. Or if he needs, then he uses it for useless sense gratification. So this is the thing that Vamandev is trying to highlight over here, that we have this innate propensity to gratify our senses, and this sense gratification results in us becoming miserable. If it were not for this desire in us to gratify our senses, then there would be no reason for us to, you know, work so hard. As Srila Prabhupada mentions in one of the purport in a subsequent verse, that actually the reason why ISKCON is setting up so many farm communities is only for this reason. That people just go to those farm communities and have a simple way of life, simple living and high thinking. And actually if you see, if you are living off the land, just as Srila Prabhupada would say, 1 acre of land and 1 cow, it's more than adequate to keep a person happy, so that the rest of the time that is available to him, he can focus on actually fulfilling the purpose of this human form of life. But because of this unlimited desire and unlimited hankering for wanting to enjoy this material nature, and the exploitation by the people who have these resources, makes a person want to drive himself to work harder and harder. And in fact, the governments all over the world are actually thinking of how to make more facilities, or to create facilities whereby a person would be working harder and harder in order to enjoy those facilities. Like today, if you go to the Western world, that particular thing which gives you the highest degree of sense gratification is supposed to be cruising. Right? Going in the ocean, in the cruise liners. Right? And this huge, gigantic ships, you know, they have every facility inside them in order to gratify your senses. And they are so expensive. Right, because this is one. It's like a five-star hotel which is floating, and the moment you enter inside, you know, you are there for maybe 5 days, 10 days, 15 days. Sometimes you are inside this floating hotels for 100 days. Right, the ships, they go on a world voyage, they go on a world cruise, and this world cruise takes about 115, 120 days. And we have so many people who come over to our temple, who attend these cruises, you know, they come from these cruises, you know, their ships dock at Bombay, and they come and visit our temple. And when you speak to them, you realize that these people have been staying in this in this floating hotels for sometimes 3 months and just visiting one place after another, and invariably you'll find that all these places are the same. I mean, everything, whatever you find in one place is there in the other place, because these places are geared up to meet the demands of these tourists. And they, of course, the ships also will stop only at exotic locations. They will not stop, you know, none of these tourists will ever be taken to Dharavi, for example, right, where they should actually be going in order to understand the goal of this human form of life. Right? And they'll understand when they see for themselves the amount of misery that is there in this material world. Right? They will have a completely different conception of what to do with their money. But then they are taken to the most exotic locations, and they are given so much of enjoyment, so-called material enjoyment, you know, in terms of breaking all the four regulative principles: intoxication, illicit sex, meat eating, and gambling, in a very, very advanced way. Because somehow or the other, these cruise ships have to ensure that the person who is staying on the boat is not bored. Right? We can't even imagine going onto those ships for even one day. What to talk about going on the ships for 90 days or 100 days or 120 days or whatever. For 4 months you are sitting on those ships and doing the same thing basically every day. There's no variety. Every day in the morning you get up and then you see the ocean around you, and then you go to the gym, and then after that you have your lunch and take a siesta, and then in the evening you're going and having a party. It's the same thing day after day after day, right? But in order to create a situation where you will not be bored, they have so many activities on the ship that even though you may stay there for 100 days, you will still not be bored. You will come out after the 100th day or whatever, after the cruise gets over, you will want more, right? And there are hundreds of such ships. It's not that there's just one ship. At one point of time, we all know this Titanic was just one ship, which was supposed to be a ship which could create this sort of facility or give this sort of sense gratification to the people who were traveling on board that ship. It was meant only for the richest of rich people, because for the first time a ship was designed which could never sink. Right? And it was advertised as a ship that could never sink. And everybody who could afford to get onto the ship was so wealthy, and they had so much of confidence that this ship could never sink. Right? And this was a maiden voyage. It was not as if the Titanic had gone on 100 voyages and then it sank on the 101st voyage. No. Lord Krishna has a plan in order to just defeat the materialists and make them realize the futility to whatever extent. But on the maiden voyage of the Titanic, hit an iceberg and the so-called unsinkable ship sank. Right? But in those days there was just one Titanic, but today there are hundreds and hundreds of such ships which are veritable hotels, floating hotels, which provide a massive amount of sense gratification. This is the in thing today, that if you have the money and if you have the time, then you should get on board one of those ships. Right? For a truly intoxicating experience. Now, this is how this cruise ships announce it. And people are going. According to some statistics I was reading, apparently around 20 million people cruise on the ships every year. Now that's a large number of people, right, who have got so much time on their hands that they can just take, 15, 20, 25 days, or maybe sometimes 3 months time off from their schedules in order to just be traveling on the ships, doing nothing, just whiling away their time. Obviously they're not doing any constructive work when they are over there. But of course, nowadays, the ships even have internet facilities. So you have Wi-Fi and you have all those communication devices by which you can be in touch. But nevertheless, basically, you are not doing anything really constructive. I mean, you're just enjoying yourself. Right? There are hundreds and hundreds of such ships. So this,
for a person to travel on those ships is supposed to be achieving the pinnacle of sense gratification. So Srila Prabhupada is mentioning in this particular purport, saying that this is the aspiration for a materialistic person. To somehow or the other achieve that level of sense gratification where I can truly enjoy myself. But then we understand from the pages of the scriptures that this sort of sense gratification and this sort of happiness is temporary. It doesn't really last. It's a fleeting moment of happiness, but there is a much larger amount of unhappiness that is awaiting us. Because to the extent that we enjoy in this material world, to that extent we have to suffer. That's the law of nature. Right? So if we are going to be enjoying, for sure it's a matter of time by which we also suffer. Like today you see in the Western world, this is a reality. The reality is, although there are so many facilities for so-called enjoyment, also there is immense amount of suffering. Both go hand in hand together. Like if you look at the people today, you know, if you take any country in the world, just take America for example, right? The Americans who actually are supposed to be, you know, the white-bodied Americans, right? Over the last so many years, because they were like Srila Prabhupada and His Holiness Radhana Swami would call them, they are the old crows, right? They have been there for so many years and so many lifetimes, and they have just been trying to enjoy and chewing the chewed again and again and again. They have got completely jaded with sense gratification. And there's just no incentive to work. They are so much habituated to gratifying their senses that when it comes to actually contributing something to the economy in terms of working hard, they're just not able to do it. It's just that their physical situation has deteriorated to such an extent, and also, of course, their upbringing, the way they are brought up, invariably they come from broken families. Nowadays the trend is that if you want your child to be protected, to somehow or the other have a nice education, you cannot send your child to a public school in America. Right? Education in America is free. Any school in the neighborhood, you have to send your child only to a school in the neighborhood. So any school that is in the neighborhood gives free education. Absolutely no charge. But because the schools provide free education, the type of children who come to the schools is really very pathetic. They mostly come from broken homes, single parents, abused children. And what will they do when they come to school? They will just carry with them all the impressions that they are having from their childhood association with their parents or with their siblings. They will just bring that to the school, and whatever they do at home, they do in the school. And invariably the children are so hyper, they are so uncontrollable, nobody can control them. So for devotees to send their children to such schools means actually sending them to a slaughterhouse, literally. So what devotees have to do if they want to continue to make a career in the US, after a particular age, because fortunately till the age of 9 or 10 the children are still not so much conditioned by the environment under which they grow. But after the age of 9 or 10, when the child, particularly when he enters into puberty, that's a time when he becomes really aggressive, right? And then he tries his level best in order to enjoy his senses. So till that time, relatively, there is a certain amount of safety in sending your child to a public school.
But then after that age, after the age of 9 or 10, you have to send your child to a private school. And private school costs a hell of a lot of money. Very few people can actually afford to send a child to the private school. Right? So most people send their children to the public school. So what are they actually doing by sending their child to the public school? They're actually sending him to a slaughterhouse. So it's only a matter of time before which that child, you know, grows up to be an adult. And instead of contributing to society, he actually becomes a demon. And sometimes just by looking at small children, you know, when we visit these places and we see that, you know, there are this parents are having their small babies cuddling, and you know, the mothers and fathers are so much showering so much of affection on the child. And then you just think, you know, what is going to happen to this child 10-15 years down the line once he starts going to high school? It's the same story. Practically every child that goes into this educational system in America comes out with so much of conditioning. So the child practically has no chance. He has no chance of ever making it into this material world with, you know, a mind that is free from all this association. So naturally, you see that although there is so much facilities for enjoyment, who are the ones who are actually suffering? The parents are the ones who are suffering. Because they bring this child up, they get the child into, you know, mainstream school, and the child is, you know, completely against the parents. So that's the time when they actually regret, why did we ever have a son, or why did we ever have a daughter? What's the point? Why did we go through all these difficulties of bringing up a child for him to be like this? And that is actually what is surprising, that even though parents are able to see that this is what the educational system is going to do to my child in a matter of time, but still they go ahead and have children. Right? So that's the most surprising thing that one sees in the Western world. I mean, why would anybody want to? Because they think that, you know, by sending our child will not be affected by this. Our child will be protected. Our child will be safe. But very, very few children ever make it through this educational system unscarred. Very few children. Right? So much of suffering. Because the greatest amount of suffering that a parent undergoes is to see the suffering of the child. Right? Anything else in their own lives, whatever happens to them in terms of, you know, physical problems, etc., or financial difficulties, they will be able to overcome. But then when they see the child suffering, or when the child is making wrong decisions in his life, and we are trying to explain to the child that this is not what you should be doing, this is, you know, this is detrimental to you, but still the child is, you know, not able to appreciate whatever you are telling him or her, and just goes and does whatever it wants. And you know for sure that this is what is going to happen to the child. So that's the greatest amount of suffering that the parents go through. So yes, the Western world has a lot of facilities, but there's also equal amount of suffering. Right? So as devotees, we understand that wherever, whether it's the Western world or whether it's India, so ultimately, you know, unless and until we are Krishna conscious, this is Dukhalayam Ashashvatam. This is a place which is temporary and which is miserable. Right? So whatever situation, whatever we may try to do in order to make this into a place which is of happiness, it's not going to succeed. Fortunately, by the mercy of Srila Prabhupada and the Acharyas, we have this knowledge. We have it from the pages of Srimad Bhagavatam. Prabhupada's purports are so graphic. This material world is not a place for happiness. And if you listen to the lectures of Srila Prabhupada, actually you'll see that most of his lectures, except a few where he'll be talking about some katha from Chaitanya Charitamrita, but most of his lectures just goes around the same theme, that you are not this body, You are a spirit soul, part and parcel of Krishna, and you are in a wrong place. So do not try to enjoy your senses, because this will be the cause of your suffering. The senses should be used in the service of Krishna. So if you see that the theme of most of Prabhupada's lectures are just going around the same principle, that somehow or the other we have to use our senses in the service of Krishna. And in this particular verse, Uddhava is telling the gopis that what is devotional service? Devotional service actually means giving charity, performing austerities, doing sacrifices. And Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, just for our benefit, just so that we don't misinterpret whatever Uddhava is saying over here, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says that all these activities have to be done in relation to Krishna. If you are giving in charity, you have to give it in relation to Krishna. If you are doing austerities, we do it in relation to Krishna. We do austerities on Ekadashi day. Right? Like in India, the mentality is to do austerities in terms of, you know, doing fasting for 3 or 4 days a week. Because each of the days of the week have got some connection with some demigod. So if you want to please that particular demigod, you do austerities on that particular week. Right? But Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says that when we do austerities, means that we observe Ekadashi. That is the greatest austerity for us. We don't have to do any other austerities. It's so simple. The process of Krishna consciousness is actually so simple. And even Ekadashi, it's not as if we have to fast. There are so many alternatives that we can have. Right? Tapas. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says that tapas means renunciation of sense gratification for Krishna's sake. Not just renunciation of sense gratification by itself. Right? We have to do it for Krishna's sake. And similarly, Homa means fire sacrifices dedicated to Vishnu. Japa means privately chanting the holy names of the Lord. Right? So each of these activities that you see, Swadhyaya means study and recitation of Vedic texts, such as the Gopala Tapani Upanishad. I was just thinking in my mind, you know, why does Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur say Gopala Tapani Upanishad? He could have said over here Bhagavad Gita. He could have said over here Srimad Bhagavatam. Right? So I said, let me go through this Gopal Tapani Upanishad to see what it is. I mean, it's there in us. The pages of the Srimad Bhagavatam is there in the purport. So obviously it's bona fide. Right? So there is this Gopal Tapani Upanishad which has been translated by one of Srila Prabhupada's disciples. And the commentaries that he has given is of Baldev Vidyabhushan and Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. Right? And very interesting, Gopal Tapani Upanishad. It talks, you know, the questions that are being asked to Narad Muni in that, this are very basic. Who is Krishna? And how can we serve him? How can we get to know him? You know, the Gopal Tapani Upanishad, that just has 2 chapters. Maybe it has about 100 shlokas. But then it begins with the question, who is Krishna? And how do we serve him? And how do we get to know him better? Right? And then there is a very elaborate description as to who is Krishna and how do we understand him as a personality. Right? So any scripture which has got any connection with Krishna is bona fide. Because it's glorification of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Right? So, just a few things I wanted to say about this verse. Does anybody have any questions? Yes. One second.
Hare Krishna. I'm very thankful for you. Like, you gave a wonderful lecture. Okay, nice message I received. My question is, like you said, according to this verse, like everything has to be done for Krishna's pleasure, isn't it? like yes. dana, vrata, tapa and everything. But nowadays we see there are so many so-called organizations which are coming up, religious, spiritual, on the name of spirituality and religion. They never give such kind of information that everything has to be done for Krishna's pleasure. And like the influence of such things is happening at, you know, at majority. So how do we convince someone like everything has to be done for Krishna's pleasure?
Prabhupada would say that if you want diamonds, then you go to a very selected shop. And in that shop, there will not be so many people searching for diamonds. Right? If you want broken pieces of glass, then you can go to any marketplace and there will be thousands and thousands of people searching for broken pieces of glass. Right? So we are very fortunate by Srila Prabhupada's mercy that we have come to this place where we are actually getting diamonds free of cost. Diamonds in terms of the message from the Srimad Bhagavatam, from the lips of pure devotees. Right? So it's our responsibility to give this message to others. And bring them to our temples and bring them to the senior devotees and connect them to them. So and whatever questions they have in terms of their spiritual life, they can ask and get the answers. Right? Most people are by and large innocent. It's just that they are ignorant. They don't know what is the right path. For them, tapasya means, you know, quite a few people in Bombay actually, tapasya means walking all the way from Dahisar to the Siddhivinayak temple, you know, in the middle of the night and then early morning you have darshan of Lord Ganesh. Of course, it's very nice to have darshan of Lord Ganesh. We have Ganeshji outside our temple hall, right? But just doing that austerities and then along with that doing all other activities of sense gratification will not yield any result. The purity of this path of Krishna consciousness, what has been given to us by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, is doing certain activities which are favorable to Krishna consciousness and doing certain not doing certain activities which are not favorable to Krishna consciousness. So we have to do both. And only when we do both do we get the desired result. Do we get the understanding that this is the true path? Because once we apply it into our lives and then we are able to experience the rasa, the happiness that is coming out of associating with devotees, right? Reading the scriptures and honoring Krishna Prasadam and chanting the holy names. This whole process, once we start developing the taste for it, then it's, you know, we understand that we should never ever think about any other path, right? This is the path for us to follow. So yes, it is unfortunate that there are so many people out there who are sort of being misled and of course they are making progress in their own way, right? They are getting, sometime or the other they will get connected to Krishna. Once they take shelter of that particular demigod, you know, in a manner in which they are, it's in complete completely taking shelter, ahaituki apratihata worship, without any motivation. If they are doing unconditional worship of this, of those demigods, it's a matter of time that those demigods will connect them to Krishna. Right? And we have so many examples of people who were worshipping demigods and have come into the path of Krishna consciousness. How? Because the demigods have shown them the right path, that this is the path that you now need to take, because you have worshipped me with so much of sincerity. I am actually worshipping Krishna, so it is my responsibility to connect you to Him. Right? But so far as you are worshipping me in the mood of trying to expect something from me, then, you know, obviously there is no impetus for the demigod to connect. But the moment you come to the stage of ahaituki apratihata worship, then the demigod also feels obliged to connect you to Krishna. Right? So, sooner or later they will come to Krishna consciousness. Right? But Prabhupada has told us that we have to try and make this as soon as possible. So, it's our responsibility to preach the message of Krishna consciousness to whoever we come across. Bring them to our temples and connect them to the devotees and then leave them. You know? If they take up to the process, it's fine. But that endeavor has to come from us.
And that's what actually makes Lord Krishna very happy. Right? When we bring them to the lotus feet of Lord Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita that anybody who brings anybody to me, you know, that person makes me very happy. So that's our responsibility, and then we leave it to between him and Krishna. Right? We give him the philosophy, we give him Krishna Prasadam, we give him the association of devotees, we give him all facilities. Right? Beyond that, what can we do? Right? Is that okay? Thank you. Grantharaj Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.